Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 5 of Power Up and Game. I am here with Riley, and today we are having another deep dive discussion, and this time is on the critically acclaimed indie game, Tunic. Riley, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, especially now that my Xbox Series X is finally here. It took a year and a half. Yes, it took a year and a half, but I finally have my Series X, and I can't wait for everything to get done downloading on it, because that's what I've been doing. Just trying to download a few things on it, because unfortunately my Ethernet does not reach to my Series X, so I'm stuck on Wi-Fi for now. But I'll go out and I'll get a longer cable and upgrade from wireless to wired.
Very nice.
Let's see. All right, before we jump into a discussion of Tunic, as always, we take a look at some reviews and see what other people are saying and see how we match up to them. Like always, we only pluck 3 or 5 from around the industry and share an excerpt of all of them. We'll be leaving links to every review we talk about here, and when we're done with our roundup, we'll share our reactions to these reviews and how the game is being received so far. First up is Richard Wakeling of GameSpot. They said, a few blemishes aside, the 8-year wait for Tunic has been completely worth it. If you could lay out all of its pieces separately like a broken puzzle, each one might seem derivative. However, when you put all the pieces together to create a full picture, they make for a game that's quite unlike anything else. And even called it a bit of a Souls-like, as he continued, most Souls-like tend to adapt a grimdark fantasy aesthetic, but Tunic harkens back to the 8 and 16-bit eras by presenting a vibrant and colorful world that also offers a fiendishly difficult challenge. It is not simply evocative of games from the late 80s and early 90s because it creates similars of their graphics and gameplay, but because it manages to capture a tangible feeling of exploration and difficulty, where an instruction manual is your tool to deciphering everything. It's kind of a game you would have purchased because the box art looked cool, which I will admit, yeah, that's very, very accurate, actually.
Yeah.
Especially for me. Eagerly flipping through the pages of his manuals on the car ride home, not quite understanding it at all, but getting excited of the possibilities all the same. In Tunic's case, this grand adventure lives up to the expectations, and they gave it a 9 out of 10.
I can't believe... I don't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But I was just about to say, I can't believe that it's been an 8-year wait. I knew it was a long time, but I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, that thing has been showing up on Xbox's indie sizzle reels for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes it feel like it's been even longer. It's like every time Microsoft shows off their ID at Xbox sizzle reels, Tunic is right there.
Yeah.
And it's like it's so weird. Like, I didn't know it was 8 years, to be honest. Because I've been following this game for a while, but even I was like, 8 years? Really? We
waited
that long for it?
It always kind of felt like that game that, like, I never really thought that I was going to be able to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like this is a fever dream. This is just a thing that's going to, like, show up and forget about it and then find it, like, in a bargain bin or something.
Yeah, like, hey, remember that Fox game that they always used to show?
Oh, yeah, Star Fox. No, the other Fox.
No, not that one.
In fact, I don't know, Nintendo doesn't really show Star Fox. Like, not even in, like, Smash Brothers. It's weird.
Yeah.
They're once Golden Goose. Our next review comes from Rachel Kaser, and I hope I said that right, of Games Beat. They went on to say, I enjoyed Tunic, and I was pleased during most of my time with the game. It's challenging, but it's also tranquil. Is a little slice of puzzly goodness in the middle of multiple massive open world releases. And for that, I'm grateful it exists. I just wish sometimes Tunic would meet me halfway and not have me frustrated either with the controls or with exploration. And they gave it a 4 out of 5. Let's see. And we're going to go to Otto Kratky. Man, you know what, Riley? One day we're just going to have you read all the names.
I think it's Otto Kratky. Yes.
I want to say, I keep wanting to put a V in there. I want to keep wanting to say Kraftsky. I don't know why. But Otto of Digital Trends says, Tunic desperately tries to recreate the magic of classic Legend of Zelda game, all too often doing so to a fault. It tries to be hands-off and instead leaves the player with no idea of where to go. It wants to have simple combat akin to something like Zelda Oracle games. But Oracle, huh? I don't think I played that. But that approach gets stale incredibly fast here. More than anything, though, Tunic left me feeling lost in its mysteries, which I didn't want to solve out of need or drive, but because I couldn't bear them anymore. See, so one thing we just want to say here is that these are just opinions from people who played the game. We're here to have a discussion about the game's reception and what we personally think of the game. Not attack someone's opinion on it. It ain't that serious. I don't know. I don't think you and I have ever had a problem where we're like, this person is terrible. Forget this person. So I don't think we have to worry about that on this podcast. But with that being said, Riley, what are your thoughts on Tunic's reception so far?
I think it's interesting because the reviews are mostly positive, but the last one you read was not such a positive review, which is okay. And it seems like some people like really like this game, and some people, you know, it's not their favorite thing, which, you know, I think makes for a more interesting discussion about games. As for myself, I personally think this game is going to be near the top, probably in my top five, top 10 of the year. I think it's that good. But yeah, as far as the reception goes, you know, it's good to see an indie game getting mostly positive reviews. What about you?
So I do like that a lot of people are finding things enjoyable about Tunic. I do remember I was super excited about it. I think I've brought it up in this podcast multiple times.
You did. You were actually the person that got me to give it priority.
Oh, look at that. I'm a bad influence.
Yeah, you're not. You seem to be not super hot on this game. So I want to hear your general thoughts about it.
So my general thoughts is actually pretty lukewarm about it. I do like the game. Don't get me wrong. It definitely has some serious flaws that I find highly annoying for not just Tunic, but a lot of games like it, or the games that it like tries to imitate. I wouldn't really say a 2 out of 5. That seems a little low because Tunic isn't a broken game per se. It's not like a terrible game. So I think 2 out of 5 is definitely, in my opinion, a bit hyperbole. You know, you're not, sure. I wouldn't look at this gameplay and hear somebody like, oh no, you can do way better than this. Like, you don't want to mess with this game. So, like, no, I wouldn't mind recommending this. But giving it a 9 out of 10 or stuff, I'm not quite there either, because unfortunately, Tunic reminds me why I really don't care much for like the super retro games, like the NES versions of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the older Zeldas, because they reminded me why I struggled in those games so much. And we'll discuss that more with our deep dive, because it does have to do with not the aesthetics, not the music, and not the combat, but the level design. And that's my biggest issue with this game. So yes, we could just go ahead and get into that. Let's talk positives first. Riley, what are some positives that you really like, that you want to put front and center?
Yeah, so I think my positives are going to be your negatives, so it's really just a matter of taste. I like the level design. I like the general sense that the game gives of being lost and not really knowing what to do all the time. I think, to me, what it feels like is, if I was playing Legend of Zelda Link to the Past or Link's Awakening, except this game doesn't have years of history behind it of like people talking about it, and, you know, through listening to podcasts and just being interested in games media, you know, I've heard some like spoilery things about certain puzzles or like, you know, what those older games have to offer. So it's not completely like a fresh experience going into it, where Tunic obviously is, just because it's a new game. I really like the instruction booklet mechanic, which is basically, as you're going around the different levels, you're putting together the instruction booklet, and the instruction booklet is the only thing that, like, the only chance that you have of knowing what to do, right? There are, like, certain things in the game that you just need the instruction booklet. Like, you would never think to do these things unless you looked at the instruction booklet. And I think the cool thing about it also is the instruction booklet is mostly in, I don't want to say a foreign language, it's a language created by the game, right? Basically hieroglyphic type characters. Although there is some, you know, natural, there's English for us, right? Because, but you can probably change that to whatever, like, natural language that you speak, right? But most of it is slight language that we can understand and pictures. And so you kind of have to put together in your own mind, like, okay, this is what I have to do. Or you have to look at a picture and, like, put it together in your head to, like, understand sometimes what you have to do. The game presents so many interesting twists and turns to it, where things happen that I didn't have any idea that they were going to happen. In fact, I thought I was pretty close to the end of the game last night, and then, well, I don't want to put out any spoilers, but I did this thing, and I thought it was the end, and I thought I knew where the story was going, right? But then the story did a complete zigzag, and I was like, wow, this is weird and awesome. And yeah, I don't know. I love the idea also of not being able to see everything, because the camera is sort of in a fixed position. And so you can't always tell, like, if there's a ladder that goes down somewhere, or if there's maybe perhaps a secret area. Like, you don't know until you go over to that area, and you might get a button prompt, or, you know, Tunic, like, the screen will go black and you'll end up in a new area and you're like, oh, I just found a new shortcut. Or you'll come out of a place that you thought was completely unrelated, and it turns out that that shortcut always existed. It's just you, like, it was so hidden from you that you wouldn't have been able to find it unless you came out of that other place, which I think is super awesome. I don't know. I love exploring around. I love figuring out what to do. It makes me feel, like, accomplished, even though the game is secretly pushing you towards, like, doing specific things just through level design. Like, it still puts I feel like it puts the power in my hands to feel like, oh, I did that. I figured this out, right? So yeah, those are my general positives with the game.
Okay, yeah, I definitely understand the whole feeling lost, because you do wake up on a beach,
yeah,
like nothing but your but the little tunic that you got on. And,
yeah,
you know, and when that first started, I thought it was cool. It was like, oh man, I don't know what's going on. You know, you get to explore this island. There's creatures everywhere. They all want to hurt you for some reason. You start off with a stick, or at least. Actually, you could actually not find the stick. You could actually easily miss the stick and go to the sword.
Really?
Oh yeah, I've done it before.
Huh.
Yeah, it was weird. Well, within the game, because I played the demo of the game like months before it happened. And the demo has things change from the actual version. But yeah, it, like, the beginning, you can, like, just run past some enemies.
Okay. Yeah.
They don't really do anything much, and you can run past them, and you can eventually find yourself the sword, which is kind of strange, because when you first start, you want to pick up the stick when you find it and just start swinging, but you never notice that you kind of don't need to. It's kind of like a tutorial weapon.
Yeah.
which I felt was pretty cool. And I do agree with you. I do love the manual being kind of like an unlockable thing. And like, because it gives you incentive to pick them up. It's like, oh, they actually mean something, like quite literally.
Yeah.
Until you collect them and you can't read it. It's like, oh God, not again. I can't do this. It harkens back to when you were a child and you couldn't read. You knew certain words. And you were like, I don't know what's going on, but pretty pictures.
Wow. You know, I never thought of it that way. But that's exactly what it is. You're completely right.
Yeah, and at first it was kind of cool. It's like, oh, this is nice. I was hoping that it was because it was a new island to Tunic and they didn't know the language. And I was hoping, like, as you went along and you start learning more stuff, the manual would become clearer and clearer for you, but that's not the case. The strange language continues to be strange. And I found that kind of disappointing, but at the same time, I actually, like, didn't really mind because it did make the island continue to feel foreign. And, well, it's a series of islands, technically. It's somewhat connected by bridges. So I thought that was kind of cool at first. And I do like some of the puzzles because they were kind of fun because it does let you explore a little. I went to the dark cave without the lamp because I didn't know that's what I needed. I
did that too at first.
And I actually fought my way through the cave. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, but this is great. And I started getting hurt randomly. And I was like, what am I hitting? What's hitting me? And only to later find, like an hour later, find the lamp.
Yeah.
And go back and find out that there are spike pits. Well, geez. And I don't know if you noticed, Riley, but at a certain part, when the dark cave, if you find the manual script for it, or you pick up the manual script for it, it actually has a pre-drawn line to show you where to go.
I did not notice that.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
It is. They have like, it has like, as if you bought the game pre-owned and whoever had it before you had already drawn out.
Oh, are you talking about on the map in the booklet?
Yeah, in a little booklet. Yeah, it has this little drawn out line showing you where the traps are. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. Not every page has it, like very few pages have them. And I do kind of like that when you pick them up, they're not in sequence. Like I had page 1, then 6, then 23, then 34. It's like, oh, I'm missing a lot of pages. Like how many pages are there? 16, 13, and 12. And I was like, that's kind of cool that, you know, they're set up to where they kind of work in your favor. I found one page that showed me about the bombs. I was like, oh, is that? I thought it was a candy cane. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know it was a stick of dynamite. And I still don't know what the... Okay, Riley, can you tell me what the effigy is?
The effigy? What are you talking about?
There's a little item you can pick up that looks like a tiny little fox... like...
Okay.
Bread thing?
The only reason I know what this does is because I did it yesterday. So there's two of them. There's one that looks like a little fox head. Yeah, that's not the one you're talking about. You're talking about the one
sweet bun.
The one that's a little sweet bun. So what that is, if I'm thinking of the correct item, is when you use it, it's basically like it's coins, right? You throw it on the ground and you get a bunch of coins. You break it open. There's another item.
Piggy bank?
Yeah, it's a little piggy bank, exactly.
Oh, I see. I've been holding on to it. I've been holding on to that and the little fox plush thing that looks like Tunic.
Yeah. The plush ones, if I'm thinking of the correct item, do you want me to tell you what those do, or do you want that to be a secret?
I kind of want it to be a secret.
Okay, no problem.
Because unfortunately, the booklet, it shows them and it says the name of them, but it doesn't actually show what they do. And like you can hand certain items to the statue that you use to save and replenish health. And I'm afraid to actually do it because I don't know what the heck it does. I don't know if it gets me coins, and I don't want coins because what if those things are important? Like, why wouldn't they just become coins instantly? Why do I have to hand them over? Does something happen? I don't know enough about the statues. Like, the game doesn't really give you anything, and the booklet doesn't really help a whole lot. And that's a double-edged sword of this. It's a cool mystery, but if you're going to make a booklet of it, at least, like, throw me a bone. Don't just tell me that it's called an effigy. Like what is that? Do you even know what effigy means? Like, does it give me extra lives? Which it doesn't, because technically there's no game over. And, like, does it give me more health? Like, what does it do? And I guess I just haven't reached that point to where the game feels those items are necessary, or at least not willing to tell me how necessary they are. Because I just found that my little loaf bread is just a piggy bank.
Yeah. To be fair, like, I haven't used many of the items. I haven't found a real need for them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm afraid to use them, because what if I need them later? And I don't know what exactly they're supposed to do. And you don't really get a whole lot of them.
I have been using the bombs lately just to get out of some sticky situations. And there was a really hard boss, like, harder than any boss that I've played previously in the game, that was just kicking my ass over and over again. And I tried to use bombs on him, and then I ran out of bombs. And so I decided, like, screw this. And I went and just, like, I basically, like, leveled up, right? And then spent some hours just, like, walking around, looking for stuff, looking for things that I could upgrade Tunic with. And then went back and beat him on my first or second try after doing that. But yeah, I understand.
See, you know, it's actually weird. I should forget that I have them, that I have the items.
Sure. Yeah, I do too. But I'm always that kind of way with items in games. Like, I rarely use items in games. Like, yeah, you should see my Elden Ring, like, inventory. I don't use anything. Loaded
with junk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the worst part. Like, that's the worst part of modern gaming. It's like, you've been conditioned to, like, I don't know when I'm going to find more items like this. I don't know when it's going to be useful. So I might as well just hold on to it.
However, I will say, with Tunic, just in this discussion, it's something that I recently found out, is there is a mechanic that rewards you for using certain items. That's all I'm going to say.
See, I haven't discovered that system yet, because I just found that my effigy is coins, so that's cool.
Yeah, if it's the item I'm thinking of, yeah, I think it's just a little piggy bank.
Oh, I thought that was like a little loaf bread fox thing. I don't know how to, I don't really know what it was going with it, but I thought it was cute as hell and I wanted to keep it. I was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with this.
But I think in terms of that design, it's really pushing you to just, like, try things out. Which, you know, a lot of people might be hesitant towards with items, understandably.
I am. I'm far too cautious about that.
Yeah.
Like, unless I have 600 items of something, I'm afraid to use it, because I don't know when I'll find it again, or if I'll be able to afford another one. One of the problems with modern gaming, folks. Which is what put Tunic in kind of a weird spot. It's like, it wants to be old school. And unfortunately, due to, like, modern coding on gamers and on our brains, it kind of holds Tunic back. And by that, I mean, like, the overall frustration that I had with Tunic. You and I have actually touched on this before we started recording. My frustrations with Tunic was that daggone level design. It's a cute game. I like the level designs. I like the way everything looks different. Like, if I go to an area, I know I'm in a new area. And if I go back to a different area, it looks similar, but also looks different. Like, it has enough variety to where it looks like a different area. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. Because it helps with remembering the layout of the map. Because you're going to need it. Because there's a lot of backtracking in the game.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the thing that bothered me was, in your mind, when you're going through these levels, you remember what you see. Like, you remember where certain enemies are placed. You remember where certain boxes are open. What you don't see are some of the hidden paths, which is okay. I'm okay with that. When I found out that there were hidden paths, I was like, oh, that's so cool. There's more to this level than meets the eye. The problem is, for me, there's been a few times where I was stuck on a piece of the island and I was going back and forth all around trying to figure out where I was supposed to go next because there just happened to be a ladder that I can't reach because it's like a floor down from me. Only to find out behind the tree, behind a pillar covered up by a tree in the foreground, there's a path that leads me down to the bottom floor towards that ladder I was looking at. And I was like, why? Why is that a thing? Why are you hiding paths that's necessary for me to advance? And that really bothered me because it happened on more than one occasion. But you say you didn't really have that frustration.
No, I can't really remember a specific instance like that. Most of the time for me, what I've noticed is if there is something that's hidden, it leads to maybe like a treasure chest or something. But I don't know, maybe I've just like found, maybe the difference is like, maybe that has happened to me, but it doesn't really bother me in the same way, but I can understand for some people, like why that's super frustrating. I think for me, it's like exciting. Like if I can't figure out where to go next in a game, you know, usually what I do is I just kind of wander around and like try out different things. And then when I find the answer, it's like, that's more satisfying. Like yesterday, I finished a specific, you know, I got to a specific milestone in the game, we'll say. And literally the achievement that popped up on my Game Pass on my computer was, what now? Which I thought was funny because in my brain I was like, yeah, what now? but like maybe yeah, about
an that a lot.
Yeah. Maybe about like an hour later, like I remembered, you know, this other thing and kind of put it together in my brain and went to this place and all this other stuff. Like that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the design for me, what I like about it is like, it lets me figure it out. You know, it doesn't want to tell me what to do. It wants me to figure it out and like make me think I'm smart, even though probably like I said earlier, like the level design was probably, you know, built in such a way to where it would make me think these other things. Right. But it makes me feel smart and I like it.
Right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. For me, I find it frustrating because I like exploring and Tunic does a great job with that. But when the game tries to artificially force me to explore, that's when I get annoyed with it. Because like, okay, you're taking me out of the game because the path I was looking at, Tunic could easily see it because she's always moving her head, looking at stuff that you need, like things that are a necessity, chests, enemies, ladders. Like she looks that way. And that gets my attention. I'm like, oh, okay, Tunic sees something. And I go over there and it's a brick wall. one of the issues that I had, one of the issues that I was able to figure out was I was hitting a wall. I was going through this path and I was hitting a wall and it looks like a dead end, but only because there was something in the foreground that was blocking the path that I actually needed to go to. And the only reason I found it was because Tunic will look up at an enemy. And I thought maybe that was what I was supposed to do. And I hold the left trigger to focus on that enemy. And when the camera zoomed up, it showed that there's this big open gap that Tunic can walk through. And I felt really silly about that because I was like, wow, if I could see what Tunic sees, that path would have been clear and wide open. But because of the way the camera is set, and you can't move the camera, it's predetermined. And the game, for some strange reason, decided to put this item in my way on purpose. I found that to be very frustrating. It's like, okay, I get it. You don't want to hold my hand. I'm fine with that. That's cool. You can let me explore. But don't set up this artificial handicap because something Legend of Zelda used to do it. Like, that's I hate that. That was one of the reasons I really despise old NES games is because developers, and they've all, like, so many game developers admit this, they artificially made the game difficult by making certain things kind of fucky or screwy. all to make the game a little harder, so the players in the game longer, because the games back then, they're not that long. A lot of them weren't that long. So they artificially made it harder on the player in order to make the game feel longer. And Tunic kind of does that, although it does a better job of it, I will admit. And now every time I think I don't know where I'm supposed to go, I'm just continuously hitting the trigger, trying to zoom the camera up to see if I'm missing something.
Yeah, I do that too. When I figured out that I could do that, I was like, okay, I'm just doing this all the time.
Yeah, it's like the modern game where characters, you press the trigger and they have like this sonar ability that sees through walls or whatever. Yeah, it feels like that. I'm like, wow, that kind of breaks the immersion for me, because I was having so much fun running through these islands and through these caves and solving these puzzles. And now every time Tunic looks at something, I got to zoom up and make sure like it's not a hidden path or something, which some hidden paths are blended into the background, which I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, except for when Tunic keeps looking at something and I think it's a dead end and I can't find the path, because the path to the thing she was looking at is on the other side of the map. And I was like, why is that a thing? But okay, that's distracting, because, you know, I'm dumb and I want to go to everything that Tunic looks at, whether it be enemy or treasure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you told me, I think it was like, I don't even know if it was on the show or if it was just when we were talking privately, but that you told me that Tunic looks at things. It's just interesting, because like, that's something that I didn't even notice. Maybe like I said, maybe I'm like subconsciously noticing it, but not anything consciously.
Right. Yeah. No, I always enjoy when characters like, when they give those subtle hints, it's like, oh, what's this? Although Tunic, I guess sometimes she can see through walls, because every now and again, I would notice that she will look towards something that's not there. And I'm thinking maybe she's accidentally seeing something on a different part of the world she's not supposed to see just yet.
Yeah. That is a little messy.
Say what?
That is a little messy. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it doesn't happen too often. There is a section, I think it's like the second or third island, to where she keep doing it. Like, I don't know what the item was. I keep trying to search for it. So I spent a lot of time running around trying to find this secret area that Tunic keeps looking at. And there's nothing there. It's like, I climb a ladder and she'll look to her left and I go there and it's the dead end, a straight up dead end. I'm looking around and like, there's nowhere to really go. It's like a legit dead end. And she would keep looking up as if she was looking at the ceiling. And I was like, I don't think there's anything up there. And if there is, I guess I don't have the item for it or something. I don't know. Even when I zoom up, when I use my zoom trigger, it doesn't show anything. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to chuck it up as a bug and move on.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the combat? Since we're talking about Tunic herself and how she interacts with the world, what do you think of the combat?
I find the combat to be pretty fun. The only gripe I have with it is that there's not a spin attack move. But that's just me.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who thought that.
That's just me coming from Legend of Zelda. You know, I'm putting my expectations on this game. I expected there to be a spin attack, and if there is one in the game, it's definitely not like, it's not your like normal moveset, you know? So that's kind of my only gripe with it.
Have you tried Tunic's parry attack?
Yeah, I can never get that. Is that where you press, where you like jump and attack at the same time?
No, worse. It's with the shield.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I do use the shield, but I don't know if I've ever parried anything.
Yeah, she has this ability to where she can take the shield, and as enemy attacks, if you time it right, which is impossible for me, I have yet to get this down. She'll swing the shield at their attack and parry.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, I've died so many times trying to parry an attack. I'm like, okay, screw this. I'm just going to hold my shield up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is such a weird parry, because she has to charge up to do it.
See, like, this is something that I really love about the game, too. It's like, I didn't even know that this was a thing.
Yeah, I've been trying to parry against like simple enemies and harder enemies. I'm like, you know what? I'm not gonna parry jack squat. I don't care if there's an achievement for it. I ain't parrying nothing.
Yeah, I'm mostly a dodge kind of player.
Oh man, I spam dodge even when I don't need to.
Yeah.
I'm just spamming the ever living hell out of dodge. And I feel bad for Tunic because she runs out of breath so fast because of me. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Speaking of combat, what do you think about the bosses?
I hate that some of the bosses are like a quarter of the screen.
And, yeah.
And it's so bad the camera has to zoom out. And Tunic is already small.
Yeah.
So if she gets a little smaller.
Yeah.
It's like you shouldn't make an enemy so big to where my already tiny fox pretty much disappears into the level.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what boss you're talking about. Or which couple.
Yeah, no, and it made me kind of dread facing bosses, which is kind of cool, because like, hey, it's supposed to be like this big hulking boss. That's kind of cool. But I'm a tiny fox. Can I see? I would like to see where my tiny fox is. And it gets kind of weird because the boxes have like such a wide range with their attack that sometimes I was like, did I dodge that? Can I dodge that? Should I just run around? And it's to the point to where the level with times, they would have to set up barricades for a Tunic to get behind. Because some attacks feel inescapable.
Yes.
And which I was okay with, but I was like, man. I don't know why, but I kind of wish this was a little more focused. And I hate to do this to Tunic, but Riley, have you played Death Door yet?
I haven't.
Okay, well, Death Door is pretty similar, only except for Souls-like, it goes for the roguelite.
Okay.
And yeah, you play as a tiny crow who's also a reaper. And you're a grim reaper crow. And I like the bosses in Death's Door more than Tunic.
Okay. I think because, that's fair.
Yeah, because the bosses in Death's Door, like, some of them can be pretty big, but the game doesn't take the focus off of the player. Like, it doesn't take focus off of your scarecrow. I mean, off of your crow. So I still kind of felt like I was there. Like I was still in control. And while some of the battles in Death's Door are frustrating, they don't feel terrible. Tunic, on the other hand, because there are times where the game pulls out and kind of takes me away from my character, because like you, I like to be immersed. I like to feel like I'm this character. Like, I want to protect Tunic. I feel like Tunic is a character that I want to be. Like, if I was a little tiny fox, like, yeah, I want to protect myself. But when it pulls out like that, my focus is on the boss and not Tunic. And then when I put my focus on Tunic, it feels like I'm taking away from the boss, because some of the bosses have like three or four different tails with their attacks. And if you miss the tail by just a second, you're going to get wrecked.
Yeah, I would say, and as in terms of that, I noticed what you're talking about with like the first couple bosses, but after that, you know, I haven't had that issue where the camera like pans out quite a lot. I think like the first couple bosses you fight are like these big Goliath things, but after that, at least for a little while, it's kind of more small scaled, like to Tunic's scale, the bosses. I mean, like obviously they're bigger, but not quite as big as those beginning bosses.
Yeah, which the beginning boss are always the worst because you feel so unprepared and underpowered.
Yeah. I guess that's something that I wanted to talk about too. A lot of people were saying that the bosses had like a severe difficulty, and I haven't really found that except for the one boss that was just kicking my ass over and over again. And I probably spent like in total 4 or 5 hours just banging my head against the wall trying to beat this boss. And then I was like, I can't, it's impossible. So I'm just going to go like try to find some like extra upgrades or try to upgrade Tunic in some way. and I upgraded her. I got some coins. I upgraded her stamina, and I think health. And after that, I was able to beat the boss. I wouldn't say no problem, but you know, I'm probably on my second. Yeah, much easier. Like I was actually able to do it, and I don't know. That's another thing I like about the game is like when you face a boss, like almost every boss that I played. Once I get that health bar down to the last little bit, my heart is racing. and it's the same thing that I really like about Souls games, right? It's no other game, no other type of game, and this game, Tunic, does have Souls-like elements to it. No other type of game gives me that adrenaline rush quite like that. And so yeah, I really enjoy that about the game.
Okay. Well, I think for my frustration was that last bit you talking about is because you know if you screw up, you have to do it all over again.
Exactly. If you make one wrong move, and there's been that boss I was fighting last night and the night before, when I finally beat it, it's always like this idea of like, okay, do I stay in for the kill or do I play it safe? And like he had me like just like real like super close to death, right? I could probably take one or two more hits from him, and I had him super close to death, and so he could only take like one or two more hits from me, and it's like, fuck it, I'm going for it. And then I did it, and it felt awesome. That's why video games are so good.
Yeah. See, for me, I was dreading it, because I would try to swing, but I would like just dodge twice instead and just keep using up my stamina, because I'm a scaredy cat, okay? I don't want Tunic to get hurt, so I'm just gonna roll all day. Like, surely, I'm not the only one with stamina, right? Right?
Yeah.
They get tired too.
Yeah. No. I don't think they do.
No. But I just wanted to just keep rolling and then like do one attack. And I kept doing it with so many enemies. I would hit once, roll, hit once, roll, hit sure. once, and roll. And
you know,
it got tedious yeah. because it would take forever.
You know,
so I would get frustrated and I would go in for like 2-3 strikes just to get hit and lose like over half my health.
Yeah, I've tried taking the safe approach, like with the boss that I was just fighting. I tried taking, I don't know if this is a spoiler for you or not, but you end up finding a ranged weapon in the game. So I tried taking the conservative approach just to use the ranged weapon, but the thing is, the ranged weapon doesn't do nearly as much damage, at least from my, like, I don't know if it actually doesn't do more damage, but it does. It seems to do less damage, right? So it's actively like encouraging me to do like a combination of things. When the boss is far away, use your ranged weapon. When it's close, use the sword. Like, use a combination of different things. Maybe use an item to give you a little bit of an edge, right? And yeah. I think that's what I like about it, about the combat at least. At least with the combat in terms of bosses. I will say, like, you do get to a certain point where, like, you're so leveled up where it's like, okay, the combat's kind of tedious. I'm going to swing my sword, like, one or two times at this guy. He's not going to even hit me once. And it does become a little tedious in that way when you go back to, like, areas that you've been before. But in terms of, like, bosses and stuff, I really like their... I really like the boss fights.
Yeah, I would say that the bosses are pretty much the highlight of it. If the game just wasn't so pretty looking, because like I was always excited to see a new area.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And I was like, oh, wow, this is so cool. One thing that I barely noticed was the music. It seems quite selective. Like, it doesn't seem to be like too many big numbers in, you know,
yeah,
like
it's quite subtle.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of that, I'll say this is definitely like a podcast game for me, right? Like I play it, I turn on a podcast or turn on YouTube or something, and I don't really listen to the music very much.
Yeah, that's fair because there are times where I forget the music is even on because it's just so low and mellow. And if it's level, and then you enter an area that looks creepy, and all of a sudden, whoa, it's like, oh, whoa, hey, whoa. Okay, that's one way to make the level sound creepy. And I do like the way that it does fade in and out of songs depending on where you are. Because like it's again it's subtle and you will go you like even on the same island you just go from one half of the island to the next the music will slightly change depending on the area like one sounds like a beach song to where it's all gentle and it sounds like water is crashing against the rocks and then you get halfway to the level and it turns kind of industrial and you start seeing like robotic machine guns and guards everywhere. And it's just like, oh wow, this is actually pretty neat. It's a cool little touch. And it doesn't like drown out the world, if that makes any sense. Like music is used to enhance things. But for Tunic, it seems like the music is on par with the levels. Like it
Yeah,
doesn't stand out. It doesn't like overdo it.
it complements the visual design. I think that's kind of what you're trying to say, right?
Yeah, that's actually the best way to put it. It is definitely
Yeah.
a complimentary kind of deal. Like it all just flows so well together that the music doesn't get annoying. Like, because again, you do a lot of backtracking, and I don't really think I found a track or a song that I was like, oh God, not this again. I this is annoying. I hate it because every game has that one level that has the annoying music in it that you just want to hit mute button. But I've yet to find that in Tunic.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very subtle, complimentary. Yeah, I guess we should also talk about the visual design a little bit. We did touch on it a little bit, but the game is really, really gorgeous. And I think that really helps it for me in terms of I actually want to explore this world and I want to go back to places that I've been before just because it's so beautiful. Like all of the landscapes, all of the enemies are like really well designed and really nice to look at. Like everything in this game, the way that I would summarize it is it's easy on the eyes.
Oh yeah, I think it's like a cutesy assault on the eyes, 'cause like everything is just so bright and vibrant and just so adorable and pretty looking. Like even in some of the enemies, you're like, oh, I don't have to
Yeah.
kill you, but that's okay.
I don't know if you've come across the crocodiles yet.
Yo, the two-legged little crocodiles.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite
Those things are
designed
creepy.
enemies in the whole
I
game.
thought
They're
it was a frog
cute.
at first.
They're very cute.
I thought it was a frog, and I was like, "Why are you snapping at me, frog?" And I was like, "Oh, it's a gator. Oh, okay."
Yeah.
I don't like when there's more than one of them because they move kind of fast, and
They
two
do,
tiny
yeah.
little legs can only carry her so fast,
Yeah.
and those things just come snapping at you. Actually, the one enemy I don't like are the fairies.
Yeah, I don't like the fairies a lot. There was one really frustrating moment I had with a fairy, and it's one of I was in a specific part of the game that I don't want to spoil for you. But there were some fairies, right? And the one that shoots you and freezes you?
Yeah, one shoots fire and one shoots ice.
So I had killed all the other fairies, right? But I ran out of my ranged attack weapon. Like I ran it's a mana based weapon, right? So I ran out of
Yeah.
mana and I couldn't shoot it. And it doesn't come close enough to use my sword. So I was just exploring this level with this little fairy following me, and every like 2 seconds it would freeze me and I'd have to wait, and then I'd go a little further and it would freeze me and I would have to wait, and I was like, okay, this is the one instance where it's really, really frustrating. So frustrating, in fact, that I was pretty close to a checkpoint. I just restarted my game. I was like, no, I'm not doing this.
Oh man, for me, what happened was, because like I had something similar with these daggone fairies, because for some strange reason, they're allowed to fly off the map.
Yeah.
And off the screen, and then come in, just come zooming in out of nowhere. Like, look, man, there's one reason why I hate flying characters in video games. Old school NES, Sega Genesis games, they give me PTSD with flying enemies, okay? And Tunic definitely wears that on his sleeve, because, man, these fairies are annoying. I thought I could run by them. It's like, you know, I know where they are. I know where they pop out from. I'm just running by these fairies. Ran by them. They followed me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they cornered me with two of those gators.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness. And, you know, it was early on in the game, so my stamina was like non-existent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so my shield can only do so much. And it can destroy you with like one or two hits. Like you get hit with the ice and you're stuck there. And then you get hit with like two fireballs from two different fairies. But you can block it with your shield and send it back to a different fairy, which is kind of cool. If you can actually like turn towards fairy that's attacking you. Because unfortunately, the auto kind of like predetermined lock thing that Tunic does can get kind of annoying, especially when you're surrounded by enemies.
Yeah, that is something that I've noticed, is the lock on would not always lock on the thing that I wanted it to lock on. It didn't really happen too much for me, but there was one specific instance where there's like an enemy on a turret and an enemy like lower down below, and I wanted to lock on to the one on the turret, and it never wanted to lock on to that one, and I was like, why?
Yeah, it was weird. I had that problem with the turret as well. Tunic wanted to keep focusing on an enemy that was attacking her, which is like, okay, that's fair.
Yeah. But
that's a range thing over there. So I actually had to run away from the person that was attacking me, get close enough to where the gamer registered that I wanted to lock onto it. And those things do not fire like two or three shots. It's like rapid four, five, six shots.
Yeah.
And Tunic gets pushed back. So I'm stuck between a turret and an enemy wanting to kill me. And even if you dodge, you're going to dodge two or three of them, but you're going to get hit. So it's like, man, this is kind of frustrating. So yeah, that lock-on can actually be your downfall.
Yeah, sometimes. In fact, with certain bosses, at certain moments in boss fights, I've found it more advantageous to not use the lock-on. That makes it a little bit easier to dodge and, you know, makes movement, I've found, a little bit easier. It's only really with that specific boss that I was talking about that kept kicking my butt.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, because there's enemies that have like multiple like limbs, like arms and shooting lasers and crap. And when you're trying to focus and you hold that trigger, because that's what helps, or that's what makes Tunic strafe.
Yeah.
By holding on to that trigger when you're not locking onto something will let her strafe. Sometimes when you try to strafe, but you get too close to a certain enemy or an item and she locks onto it, she'll focus on that and you're trying to unfocus and dodge and put your shield up and you're like, oh God, I don't know how to use three buttons now.
Yeah.
I felt weird not being able to press three different buttons. I was like, oh, I want to block, but I have to dodge this, but I have to focus on this character because that character can shoot a range. But when I trigger, I mean, when I lock on, it's going to lock on to the melee character, which I don't want. So I get hit by the fairy. And oh, it's so frustrating sometimes. And I think that's where some of the difficulty spike comes from.
Yeah.
Because like it's weird. The game tries to keep things simple. It's like, okay, you got your A for dodge, or your X, Y, and your B. And then you got your left trigger and right trigger. And your top left one, left two. I mean, left one, R1 are used for, like, I don't know, things that you don't really care about, like open up the menu. And it's like, that's weird. Why can't I just press the select button to open my menu? Because that's what I'm used to. Like, it's kind of weird. That was the one thing it didn't do that old school games did. Like, let the select button be your inventory.
You know, that's oh yeah. It is that is something that you have to remember is to it's L1 for me on my controller. I'm using a PS4 controller, but yeah, to open up your menu.
And I'm again, I'm dumb, and I've gotten into I gotten so immersed in this game to where I felt like I was playing on an NES controller again. I kept hitting select,
Well, I do
hoping my
that too.
inventory.
Yeah, no, don't worry, I do that too.
I was like, oh, I need to open my inventory, hit select. Here's your manual. I don't want the manual. Why is the manual the select button? Why isn't the manual the L1 button? And you know, I'm pretty sure you can remap it, but I haven't done it because, you know, I've got used to certain parts of the control, but I still find myself hitting that select button, thinking that I'm playing the NES again.
I
It's
will,
like, ah.
yeah. In terms of the menu, I will say that it's pretty slick. Like just like other Souls games, the game doesn't pause when you open up the menu. However, the menu is just like kind of slides in from the left. And it's pretty, I don't know, I think the menu is pretty well designed, which is a little bit of a weird thing to say, I guess, but I don't know. I don't think we talk enough about like UI and menu design and you know, just like little things like that when talking about games and
You know, you're right. We really don't. And it is kind of weird because you think you put something in there like, oh, it's frustrating because this isn't there. Or this menu doesn't make any sense. Weirdly enough, Tunic keeps it very simple,
yeah. Very
but it
clean design.
also, yes, very clean. It definitely has that Zelda look to it. And I felt kind of shamed because I was like, oh, do I get a boomerang? I wanted a boomerang in there for some strange reason, and it's because of Zelda.
Yep, exactly. We're putting all of our Zelda expectations on this game.
I feel bad for it. And I don't even know, and like you mentioned earlier that there's no spin attack, or at least one we haven't discovered yet. The manual tried to like do like this dodge stab maneuver that I keep forgetting Tunic can do because I'm dodging away from enemies, not towards enemies.
Yeah.
So it feels kind of pointless to have in there, but maybe that's why I keep getting my butt kicked, because I'm not using everything available to me.
Well, I mean, I think that's interesting too because like I don't know if it's the controller I'm using, but that's a move that I could never nail consistently, so I don't use it, but I think it's probably that way because at least in other Souls games, sometimes, many times, it's just as advantageous to roll towards an enemy, and I would say it's probably even more advantageous to roll towards an enemy when they're attacking you rather than rolling away, even though the instinct is always to roll away. But I mean, like the good thing about rolling towards the boss is you're in range to use your sword, right? So I think that's kind of like where that design is coming from with the roll forward stab thing. But yeah, I can't like. 'Cause it's a two button like one of those two button simultaneous things. You have to get it like perfectly, and it's just a move that I can't get.
I think one of the problem is, and again, back to making fun of Tunic's short little legs and her tiny little arms, but she has no reach.
Yeah, she no reach at all.
Tunic has no real reach. So like I thought I was close to an enemy, and when I swing, like it misses. I'm like, how am I still missing? And I noticed that she just have these tiny little arms, and it's like, oh, Tunic.
Oh, Tunic.
These stubby little baby arms.
One of the other things that I wanted to mention in terms of like I guess this kind of goes with the UI design as well, but I really like the ability where the game lets you map what you want to specific button inputs just within the game, right? So like you can map your sword. For me, it's the three buttons are square, triangle, and circle, right? And you can map three items to those buttons, whatever you want, to any button, and I don't know. I think that's awesome.
No, it's definitely a great thing because it really does make you feel like Tunic as your own. Like we talk about that immersion. Some games would be like X to attack, that's it. Just press X, or in your case, square.
Most
I
games,
I'm
really.
yeah yeah I'm playing with the Xbox controller, so for me it's X.
Yeah.
A's to dodge for me, X is to roll for you, so that's gonna get kind of confusing a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I map my sword to my X because that's what I'm used to in games, like press
Yep.
X to attack.
I mapped it to square, which is the same thing,
yeah,
right?
which is the same equivalent, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you can use a bomb. I think that's what I should do. I should just put my bombs in my Y square, because Y is like, it's like your heavy attack, so it makes sense for me to put it like, I'm gonna put my bomb in my Y. And B, I haven't used B yet because I'm dumb, and I'll end up hitting B to dodge, end up using an item, like, oh no.
Yeah.
No, don't do that to me. So yeah, I'm definitely sticking with X and Y, and maybe I'll get used to B. But I forgot to even mention that. Yeah, I do like how you can do that. And it doesn't make you use up one of your slots for your health. It actually has a dedicated quick button for that.
Yes, which is nice.
Which I'm forever grateful for.
The one thing I had to get used to, though, is my inputs are backwards from what the game tells me they are. So it's actually like the reverse R1 and R2 for me. And I think it's just because, like, of my controller and my specific setup, probably. But yeah, the button mapping is backwards for me to use my shield and to use my potion, so I have to be cognizant of that.
Why would you do that?
I didn't do it on purpose. It's just the way that the game, and I never wanted to change it. So I've gotten used to it now. But
yeah, and that's the weird part, because like at first because it's so simple, it's so easy to forget that you can just like easily remap everything, like without going through the menus. You just open up your inventory and you can do everything there. Well, not everything, but you can do things there.
I should also mention that I'm using like an old PS4 controller on my computer. Like it's not a normal, like, I'm not playing on a console, right? It's not like a normal setup for me.
Right. I'm playing Tunic on PC as well. But I'm using the Xbox controller. Since you're using the PS4 controller. You know, it's weird. I never got my PS4 controller to work on my PC.
Really?
Yeah.
The interesting, I don't know. Like, I had some trouble connecting it wirelessly, but like, I just sit at my desk anyway, so I just use a wired connection to my PC and it works perfectly.
Maybe that's what I should do.
Without any setup, which is nice.
I have my Xbox controller hooked up via USB-C, so maybe I should just use a PS5 controller if I do something like that.
Sure, yeah.
But, let's see, we talked about the game design, well, the level design, we talked about tuning her tiny little legs and her no-reach arms. what about the story? Because Just putting it out there, Riley and I have yet to finish Tunic. Unfortunately, one of the worst things about being in video game journalism and podcasting and all that is that you never have as much time as you'd like, especially when you have a full or part-time job that keeps you away from things that you want to do in the first place. So we have yet to finish it, but we're still getting through it. And I think we both can give a pretty good talk on Tunic. So far, we don't have to worry about so much about spoilers then, at least spoiling the end for anybody, because we haven't yet to see it ourselves. Yeah. So Riley, what do you think of the story so far?
I think the story is pretty cool. Well, it's weird to say because like it's never like in your face really, but just playing through the game, you kind of sort of, My experience with it was like I created a certain narrative in my head, like a certain theory about where the story was going. And the theory that I had was pretty like I've seen that done in games before. And I was like, okay, that's fine, whatever. But then just last night, the story took a complete zigzag, and the character, like one of the main characters who's like your first main goal to, like, I don't know if you've seen like the big fox in like the prison. I don't want to give you any spoilers, but basically that character is not like what I thought they were.
Ooh, see, that's kind of cool, because I like, oh, I want to free this person, or maybe it's the past life, or the hero that everybody, that like the game keeps touting about. It's like, oh, is the hero's great? The hero soars. Like, who's this hero? Is it this little fox? Well, not even little. This giant fox in this prison?
And
so, yeah.
Like, I had a theory, and that theory was wrong, and the character ended up not being, like, what I thought they were. And then the game did something that I was not expecting. So, like, I think I'm in the juicy kind of part of the story now. what about you? What do you think of it?
So far, it's whimsical. And I know it's going to get dark. I know it is. Because the way it's been setting itself up, like, there's more going on in this tiny little island. And, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking Tunic is doing the thing that the Zelda timeline does, to where there's always a hero. Like, there's always a Link.
Yeah.
So, like, when one dies, there's another. And maybe that's why this Tunic is on the island. Like, this is their new life.
Yeah.
As the hero. And that's my theory, at least. I think that's where the story's kind of, or I think it might go with. But yeah, oh man, I can't wait to see get to where you are. Probably not. I probably won't get there as soon as you, because you're a lot better at these things than me. I'll get frustrated and say screw this game and put it down for like 2 hours and come back like, I'm sorry, I'll try again. And get frustrated again, but like, screw this game.
Oh, I definitely do that too. I definitely hit points where I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna take a break from this game. That's actually one of my strategies. It's like, if I'm feeling stressed out about a game, I'm just gonna put it down for a while.
Yeah, and that's what I do, and that's why it's taking us so long to finish this game, because boy, do I get frustrated easily when I'm having fun just for the game to pull the rug from under me.
Sure. I hate
the games do that. I'm having fun, don't pull the rug from under me. I'm loving this game. Sorry, so let's see, is there anything else that we need to discuss about? We talked about the bosses, talked about Tunic's cute little adorable arms. We talked about our theories of the game, the music. Is there anything you'd like to add, Riley?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I would just say, you know, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, like, I would not be shocked maybe if Tunic was my number one game of the year, which is crazy to say in a year where Elden Ring and, you know, like, Horizon Forbidden West came out. I mean, we'll see how I feel at the end of the year, but it's definitely in the conversation for me. That's the only thing I want to add. That is how much I like this game.
That is crazy how, like, when we started off this year, you were all about Elden Ring. You're like, anytime you got a chance to talk about, it's like, oh yeah, Elden Ring, I'm all about that. I can't wait for Elden Ring. I'm gonna play the hell out of it.
We'll get into it at some point, but I've definitely fallen off a little bit. Like, I wouldn't say fallen out of love with Elden Ring, but I've definitely not played it as much as I've played other FromSoft games. I'll say that.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Can we have a talk about that one? But in a year where like, we're going to get so many top tier games, even from indie games, it's strange to hear like this little Zelda Fox game might be the game of the year for so many people, at least indie game of the year. But there's still so many that's coming out that I think Tunic picked a good time to release, like where it's not getting overshadowed. The hype for Elden Ring has come. It was played it. People who didn't care about it, like myself, waiting for Tunic. And I think for someone like you who likes these kind of games, or like the challenging of the games and the immersion, I think it came at a good time for you, because just as you were finishing up Elden Ring, here comes another little Souls Zelda game that you can sink your teeth into.
Well, so that, I mean,
good timing for it.
Yeah, in a way it was good timing. In a way, it maybe wasn't, because this game kind of took me away from Elden Ring. because I was like, I just want to play the cute game.
Yeah, no, I get it. There's so many games that's like just super dark that when we get a cutesy game like this, it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. It's better for my mental health sometimes.
Oh, most definitely. You get stressed out by dark stuff. It's like, man, the world is bleak. You get stressed out by something cute and bright and colorful. You're like, you know what? It's frustrating, but it'll be okay.
it'll be okay.
I'm a tiny fox swinging a sword. I can do this. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
So, Riley, what are your final thoughts for Tunic?
Yeah, I mean, other than what I just said, not much. You know, it's definitely going to be in my top 10 for the year. I can already say that. And it's probably going to be in my top 5 of the year. So, yeah, I'm really liking it. I guess I don't have much else to say about it.
Yeah, it is, like, we put everything that we wanted to say into this game, which is kind of weird because I was the one who was super excited for it, and then
we kind of switched places.
Yeah, and then we switched around, and you're the one who's like, "Yeah, I love this game," and I'm sitting like, "Oh, I mean, I like it."
Yeah,
but it definitely killed the vibe for me because I didn't think level design wise it would take me out of the game the way it did. But that tends to happen with these old schoolish games. Like, that's why I've said it before in an earlier episode. I never really liked those choices in level design to just do this to the game to the gamers on purpose, just to try to make the game a little more difficult or longer. And I don't know if that's what Tunic was going for, or if it was just like, oh, hey, remember how games used to be like this? I don't like that the game isn't a little more straightforward with the world. Because again, when I was a kid, I loved reading the manuals. Like you got so much lore from Zelda just in those booklets. Like, you learned who Link was. You learned about Princess Zelda. You learned about Hyrule, and Tunic. I don't really like it. I think I saw it on Twitter. Somebody was able to draw out the glyphs.
And I think I was waiting for that to happen. I knew it was going to happen. I knew it.
Yeah, gamers are going to be gamers no matter what, man. Yeah. Somebody was like on graph paper was drawing out the map of certain levels and dungeons. I was like, yeah, that's old school. That's kind of cool. And I can't wait for someone to like have a completed glyph translation, because I would like to see what the booklet says. I want to read it, and that's strange that the game won't let you do it. I get not wanting to hold the player's hand, but at the same time, shouldn't it be my choice if I want to like read the manual front to back, like every time I unlock a new page? Like, I want to read it because I do find it interesting. Now, it does let you know about the enemies. Like, they have little backstories and stuff. Like, your little alligator friends, they have a little backstory that I got to read. I was like, that's kind of cool. That's cute.
Yeah.
The fairies, not so much. I'm like, I don't like you at all. And I would like more of that, because there is something in the booklet that I found, or at least one of the pages I found, where it talks about the statue. And when you give items to the statue, you're supposed to get something back from it. I think it's coins. But I'm not sure, because I didn't do it because I was afraid of losing these items. And because the booklet didn't tell me something like, oh, the goddess in this statue enjoys the color red, hint, hint. And, you know, you give them something red, you might get something back, something cool, you know. It doesn't really give you anything like that. And I was like, see, if this was a booklet for Legend of Zelda, they would hint at something at that. It's like, boy, we don't know what a fairy jar would do with this statue. It's like, huh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to catch a fairy in a jar and put it in the statue.
Yeah.
just to see what happens. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But the book says something happened, so I'm going to do it. Tunic doesn't really give us that. And it's so frustrating because I want to read it. I want to read more about it. I want to read the booklet. And I think that does go back to me being a kid. And that's what I used to do. Even when it comes to like the Game Boy games, I would like read the little five-page black and white booklet back and back to front, front to back, because I found it interesting. Those were fun.
Yeah. And
Tunic took that fun away from me.
Oh, wow. What a take.
It is. I'm sorry, but it's true. Tunic took the fun of reading the booklet away from me. And sure. Man, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. And I know that's a weird thing to complain about in a game. I can't read. The negatives for me, cannot read.
Sure.
Oh, man. So, Riley, would you recommend this game, at least from what you've played so far, would you recommend this game to friends who play games?
Yeah. I would recommend it to friends that play specific types of games, I think. I would recommend it to anybody that really likes Souls games. I would recommend it to anybody that really likes Zelda games. And I would also recommend it to anybody that really loves, like, old-school Game Boy kind of stuff. Because it sort of has, like, I don't know, to me it has, like, a Game Boy-y feel. Like, specifically Game Boy. So, yeah, I would recommend it to those people who like those types of games, for sure.
Despite my gripes about the booklet, man, I still... Ooh, why? Why? despite that, I would actually recommend this game. It is fun. It has frustrating moments, especially the level design that hides necessary paths from me. And again, I think it might just be based on the person, and you're going to start spamming the heck out of that zoom button, that lock-on button, just so you can, just to make sure you didn't miss anything. But the mystery of the island, the way everything looks when you find a new area and it feels like you're exploring something new, it was just great. And it just makes me wonder, like, man, I'm frustrated by this, but I want to see more of it. I want to see what's next. I want to see what's behind that gate that says danger. I know it's probably a dumb thing to do, but like a kid who can't read, I want to go back there. It's like that DW meme. Science not going to stop me because I can't read.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to do it anyway. But yeah, I would definitely recommend this. Even if you're not into Souls games like me, you will still find some things enjoyable. It will be a little frustrating. But I think this could be something that can get people into it, to be honest.
I think you're right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like, it's not depressing like Bloodborne. Because everything
is like, it's like light Souls. Very light, in a way. Not as punishing,
yeah, I would say. Because the game, unlike Zelda, it doesn't give you a game over and sends you back. Where those statues are placed, it can get a little frustrating because you'll get past some a tough enemy and then get cheap shot by a turret and then get sent all the way back to the statue that you were at. And when you go back to the statue, whether you go there to heal and refill your potions or you die and you go sent back, all the enemies respawn. I was like, okay, I kind of like it. I kind of don't, because it does keep the game from feeling too small. But it's, yeah, a double-edged sword, and it's frustrating when you get through a tough spot and you're low on health and you're out of potions, and then you get hit. Have you ever went up against tentacle creatures in water?
In this game?
Yeah.
No, I don't think.
Riley, there's no. You had to.
Probably did. I hope you did.
Because, oh man, because that'd be kind of cool. Like, if they're like, there's sections you can actually like pass up and miss, and somebody else can hit it and be like, oh my goodness, how'd you beat this part? It's like, I don't know, I just walked past it. That'd be kind of cool. But it's like, I think on the second island, there's this like cavern that's kind of sunken where you first meet the little green globs that spins, and when you kill them, they explode.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely think I've. Yeah, now that you mention it, I've definitely come up against those tentacle things.
Okay. I didn't fight them because I was too scared because you couldn't see them. They would just pop out of the water and slap you. So, like those things can be kind of fun and cute and adorable. And it's not depressing like Bloodborne. So I would definitely recommend this for somebody who's interested in like Dark Souls and Bloodborne but doesn't want to get into it because, let's face it, it's already a gloomy-looking game. You want something bright and colorful and happy, and you do kind of miss those old Zelda games. This is definitely something I would recommend for anybody, especially if you have Game Pass.
Absolutely. That's how I'm playing it, on Game Pass.
Alrighty. Oh, man. So as you can see, both Riley and I enjoy Tunic. I enjoy Tunic. Riley loves Tunic.
Yeah.
To the point to where she is now putting it over
over Elden Ring, which over it, did not see that coming.
Nobody did. Oh man. Especially when we did our big upcoming game list. Like, I don't think Tunic was even on your radar. I don't think you even cared about it. You're like, oh yeah, that Fox game. I don't care. Elden Ring.
Yep, exactly.
Oh man. I enjoy doing these deep dives. Like, it's always fun to like to just let loose and not really give scores to these things, but just like be able to talk about them. And
yeah,
you know,
these are my favorite episodes. These are my favorite episodes to do.
Oh, most definitely. Like, we want to do more of these, and so far we've seemed to be able to do more sooner than we thought we'd be able to.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can do it for the rest of this year. All right. So, Riley, I think we all know the answer to this for both of us, but what did you play last weekend?
Well, let's see. I played a lot of Tunic, but I also I'm playing Weird West, which is sort of like an immersive sim kind of RPG thing. I'm enjoying it. Like, I think the first couple hours I was really enjoying it, and now I'm maybe a little bit less hot on it, but maybe it's just because, like, you know, I go through like peaks and valleys of interest with games, so I might be in a valley of interest for Weird West right now. But yeah, like, I'm really enjoying that game quite a bit. Those are like the main two things that I've been playing. What about you?
So of course, like Riley, I've been playing Tunic and getting ready for this review. But I've also been playing that Spire game you told me about.
You're playing Slay the Spire?
Slay the Spire, yeah.
Do you like it?
I've been playing it. It's oddly fun.
It's not what you thought it was going to be, right? Because I remember there was some hesitancy from you saying that, like, you don't really like deck builders. But it's sort of a deck builder, but...
Yeah, I'm a little lukewarm on deck builders because I got you into that solitaire game.
Yeah, I played that for a little bit.
And yeah, that was pretty cool. And some deck building game, it all depends on how the rules work for me. Because sometimes the game likes to toss in rules that kind of screw over the players. But Slay the Spire is actually very fair. Like, when I lost, I didn't feel like I was cheated.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I made the wrong move. I should have used this card. I should have buffed up this. I should have done that. I should have blocked better. And the game actually gives you choices. Like, hey, here are some actual useful cards. They all have their downsides to it. But, like, you can actually strategize how each card will actually benefit you or even defeat you in battle. It's like, wow, this is nice. This is fair. And yeah. I think that was my biggest thing. I was afraid that it wouldn't be a fair game.
Yeah. I'm glad you're enjoying it. It's one of my favorite games, for sure, of the past couple of years.
Yeah, I can see why. It's actually really fun. Okay, so, Riley, since we know what we played last weekend, what are you going to be playing this weekend?
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to be playing more Tunic. I know I say this every week, but I might go back to Elden Ring. And I've been wanting to get back into Horizon Forbidden West as well, because I kind of dropped that game, and I've been kind of having a hankering to get back to that one. I might play those, but definitely gonna play Tunic. Probably I'm gonna play some more Weird West, you know, kind of just stick on the path that I'm on. What about you?
So I too be playing more Tunic. And you know what? Like you, I've actually been getting into Forbidden West in and out. Like, I have yet to finish it. I don't know what it is about this one, but for some reason, this one just isn't holding me as long as the first one did. And maybe it's because we have so many things that we have to play and talk about, but I don't know what it is, but I've yet to finish Forbidden West. And I know why. It's because every time I do something with story missions, I'll do one or two, and then I'll turn around and do like six different side quests. And those side quests will eat up your time.
Yeah.
And, And I think this was burning me out. It's like doing all these side quests. So yeah, I'm trying Forbidden West, but I'm definitely playing more Tunic. I've been playing a little bit of Slay the Spiral. But I'll also be, of course, playing on my Xbox Series X.
Woo!
I'll be trying that out. I'm going to try a bunch of different games with the FPS boost and the optimized for Series X kind of games. And, you know, I'm just going to be playing around with it. Nothing too serious. Because I still have a few games that I need to talk about. Like Fix Fox. I'm loving these Fox games, by the way.
Yeah.
And like they're adorable and I like them. So I don't know, maybe on another episode I'll talk about Fix Fox and to be honest with you, Riley, I don't think I'm going to try to talk you into buying it or into playing it.
Okay. now that makes me want to play it more.
you know, it's weird. I never actually really recommend anything to you. I just talk about something. You're like, you know what? That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Just go out and play it. Well, that's the right way to do it, because it turns out when anybody recommends something to me, that's an automatic like turn off. Like if somebody says you should play this or you should watch this, in my brain, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Because you told me to.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, which is bad, but that's just how my brain works. I'm not in control of it.
No, it's okay. I get it. Because when people are like, oh, you should do this, you should play this, you should watch this, you should listen to this. It's like, you're going to overhype this, aren't you? I'm going to be like, wow, you recommend this. And then I'm going to listen to him like, I don't want to talk to you. Like, we're not friends anymore. I don't want to talk to you.
It's but, called I think, Fit so Fox? Fit Fox?
Fix Fox.
Fix Fox. Okay.
Fix Fox, yes. You play as a little fox. Actually, I could talk about a little bit about it now.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
You play as this little fox that you can pretty much name however you like, because the game is so ambiguous with your little fox character.
Yeah.
That the game actually allows you to choose the pronouns of the fox.
Love that. I'm playing this game. I love any game that will let you choose your pronouns. That's awesome.
Yeah. So like you can be he, him, she, her, they, them, and you can name your little fox, and nobody actually calls you by like they don't actually like make it hardcore like him, her, he, they, they, she. Instead, they're like, so many of these games are just so friendly that it's like, wow, everything's ambiguous for a reason. Like it doesn't really hammer it in, like your fox character, because everybody's focused on the point that you're a little mechanic that you can fix things around the planet. And like, aww, that's where everybody's like big focus on. It's like, oh, hi, strange meat creature fox thing. And because you land on a planet full of robots and things are broken, but on that planet, it's illegal to fix stuff.
Sure.
So
that is funny.
It is.
Sorry, I'm looking up the game now. I really like the art style.
Oh yeah, it has this cute little pixel look to it.
Yeah,
and like even the look of the fox, like it's quite ambiguous. Oh, and the best part is your little fix fox. The game gives you the option, and it seems silly now, but like it is pretty cool. You can choose whether your fox is left-handed or right-handed.
That's awesome.
It is. And at first, I was like, "Oh, okay, I get it." So like people can feel represented, I guess. But no, because when you use your cruiser to move Fix's hands around, they would actually use either the left hand you chose or the right hand as their dominant to pick up stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so like it actually like goes through with it and makes a difference. And like it's a small difference, but it does seem pretty cool that they would go that far to just be like, it's a small detail, but it's a detail that a lot of people will like. Because when I was talking about it on Twitter, I did have one of my followers did ask if Fix Fox was left-handed, because one of the photos I used from the developer showed Fix Fox's left hand, and that's what my followers were fixated on. They were like, oh, Fix Fox is left-handed? That's so awesome. So it's like, it's a small, and for people like me who are right-handed, and like almost every game character is right-handed, it seems kind of like pointless and dumb. But it's not. It's actually, it's a really cool small detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you play as this little fox who is actually not good at fixing things.
Aw.
Yeah. And one day, your AI companion accidentally shoots you out into space without your spacesuit on. And when you get back into your ship, you get called. And they're like, yeah, man, we're sick of this. You're not very good at your job. You're getting thrown out into space. You can't fix nothing. Why are you here? So they give you one final job, and it's to fix an old lost radio tower, radio signal satellite.
Sure.
That is no longer functioning, but it's so old because this takes place in like a near future. Yeah. And it's so old. Nobody knows how to fix it anymore, except for, like, as the game likes to put it, the retro nerds who still likes the old stuff.
That's me.
Yeah, they're like, there's nobody to fix it, but one of you retro nerds. And like, they actually call her a nerd. Well, aww. I picked her for my character.
Yeah. That's and awesome.
Like, yeah, so like, you get sent to this planet as like a last chance to prove that you can actually do your job. But a space storm hits your spaceship and you crash land on this island. So now you got to find a way to fix this machine. Solve what's going on the planet and then get back home. And without spoiling too much, that's what I'm gonna say about Fix Fox until we actually do like a more general discussion about it. But
definitely.
So far the game is pretty cute, and I do like some of the small details they put into it. And it's actually well written. It's a funny game.
Awesome. I might have to check it out. Now that's not on Game Pass, is it?
No. I don't think
okay.
so. No.
Okay.
And the only reason I have it now, like Fix Fox, I got from the developers.
Sure.
They sent me a review key for it. But originally Fix Fox, I believe I saw it at one of the indie festivals that they were doing online. They were showing off the game and I was like, oh, this is kind of cute. But again, at the time I was thinking about Tunic. So I was like, I'm gonna hold off on this game and play Tunic. And they actually release close to each other. To be honest, I think Fix Fox came first, and about a week or so later, Tunic came out. So I've actually been playing Fix Fox on and off, and I've been playing Tunic on and off. But that's why it took us so long to do this review, because we actually want to get far enough into these games to talk about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so with all that out of the way, Riley, what are you working on, and where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm not working on much. You can just find me on Twitter and in the Discord, in our Discord server. You can find me on Twitter at Logue, LOGUEGUE _ Riley, RILEY.
As for me, I am working on Fix Fox. I know I've been saying that for a while now. Again, I've been doing it on and off so I can do this podcast and do my job as editor-in-chief at Bagel Games. And, you know, we've all been running around doing things, but I guarantee you we will talk about Fix Fox. But yes, I'm working on Fix Fox, and I'm also still playing Tunic. And you can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. And if you find a widow in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you're in the right place. You know, I wonder, did the developers for Tunic and Fix Fox send me the keys because they're like, oh, hey, you're a weirdo. You like foxes? Here you go, man. I like to pretend that's why they like me. But you can like us on Discord, which is the best way to get in touch with us for now. And please, please join our Discord. Riley and I, mostly Riley, we go on the Discord every now and again, and you know, we chat it up with everybody, send out a reminder of what we're gonna talk about, and even ask our audience, like, hey, what are you guys playing this weekend? What do you like to play next weekend? What game are you looking forward to? And we would like to hear from all of you, especially if you're new to the podcast. We'd like for you to jump on over to our Discords and join in on the fun. And please consider dropping us a rating. It helps us out tremendously. Please leave a nice little review for us, because something algorithm, you all know how the internet works. You can check out our latest episode of Nerds Talk Movies, where Drew and Taylor did a retrospective on Rocky 2. Man, is Rocky 2 the one with the Russian boxer?
No, that's 4.
Is that 4?
Rocky 2 is Apollo Creed again.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Oh man, maybe I should just buy some of the old Rockies.
Oh, have you never seen them?
Oh no, I have. It's just been a long time.
Just a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've seen Rocky 1, 2, pieces of 4. I don't think I've seen 3. And I haven't seen Rocky Balboa, nor have I seen Creed 1 and 2 yet. So I'm missing out on a lot of Rocky.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever watched Balboa. And I haven't watched Creed 2 yet. But yeah.
All right, so we're both missing out on history here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Man, but as for now, we'll be posting the first ever episode of Clash of the Stash on Friday, April 29th. That episode will see Riley debate against a mystery opponent over who is the best first generation Pokemon. I will be judging that. And I'm letting you know now, Riley, I only have one Pokemon in mind that needs to be answered. And if the person, you or your opponent, says that Pokemon, is an instant
answer. You know, knowing a little bit about you, I think I just put it together what that one might be.
Oh, man. That's why I'm terrible at being judges. I mean, I'm honest about my bias, but at the same time, I probably shouldn't be biased. Sure. Oh, man. We've said this before a few times, but we're just mentioning it again so there's no confusion. We won't have any new content during Clash Week. Instead, our team is using that time to work on making Clash at a Stash an enjoyable show. Basically, we're doing this show 3 times a month now instead of 4. We may revisit that down the line, though. We're workshopping on this, basically. Mostly because, you know, these kind of podcasts, they take up some of our time, you know, and doing Clash of the Stash, we have to take people from 2 different podcasts and bring them together, and we work on different schedules. So there's a lot of meet and greets and scheduling that we do before we do even a single episode, and we're trying to find the best time for everybody. Last but not least, check out thenerdstash.com, where you get all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. If you're playing through the Lego Star Wars the Skywalker Saga right now and want to know where to find all those data card locations, or maybe you want to know about some cheat codes, we have some guides on that and all sorts of other stuff. Actually, Riley, have you been interested in playing Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga?
I'm interested in playing. Well, actually, you know what? I'm gonna say no. Not really. I'm not like super into the Lego games myself. I don't want to end on a bummer, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it.
No, I mean, I don't blame you. Like, I haven't played Skywalker Saga either because honestly, I am Legoed out. Like, yeah. A Lego movie, I wouldn't mind watching another one of those. Lego Batman movie, absolutely. As for the Lego games, honestly, I've played so many of them, they've been so oversaturated, I don't think I want a collection of all of those Lego games in one. So, yeah, I don't blame you. But if you have Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga or you're interested in it, head over to thenerdstash.com. They have all kinds of content on that. And you might find something that you missed during your second or third playthrough. So thanks, Riley, for joining me as always. It's always great to be able to talk about these things with you, other than like depressing news and whatnot in the world of gaming.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always great to like find a common ground on games, which, let's face it, in the world of gaming, you don't get too many of those. And so it's always great, even though we don't agree on everything, it's always nice to be able to talk about these things and hear the other person's perspective. And thanks to all of you for listening in. I know that we are taking our time with Clash of the Stash. We have our date up, but we do appreciate you all coming in week after week, even if it's week 1 and then come back week 3 every other week. We do enjoy doing this show, and we are happy that you are all sticking around with us. Or if you're new, we're glad that you gave us a chance and you checked this out. And we hope you come back. And we will be back next week. Let's talk about gaming news.